Did you know that during the month of July, you can receive 6 Archbooks for children on the best love parables of Jesus for less than $10? Find out more about this 6-book series, The Best Loved Parables of Jesus, for children ages 5 through 9 at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040, 1-800-325-3040. The Best Loved Parables of Jesus, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July.
Scared. It took us 4 years fighting that virus, but we are survivors.
It was a virus created by scientists in a lab. You can't blame the apes.
Who the hell else am I gonna blame?
We need to give them a chance.
Welcome to animals. Apes! Together! Strong!
War, it's not what you want. There must be another way.
War has already begun.
That's the trailer from the new movie, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. Is this, I remember watching the old ones, they seem kind of cheesy now, where they went back and tried to explain how it is that that Charlton Heston scene on the beach came about, how he found the wrecked Statue of Liberty, realized that he was not on some distant planet, but on his home planet. They went back, they tried to tell the story of how it all happened. Now, this is a reboot of that 70s series of films. Of course, now we have a different view of how these things might have happened, maybe with man to blame himself, a dystopian future brought about by our own dabbling in science, dabbling too deeply into things that we should probably leave alone. Is that what this movie is all about? Joining us to review the movie, Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts, and he's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He also taught a course at Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
Is this just another story, as so many of them are, of our science, our knowledge, our delving into research or experimentation too deeply, just coming back and backfiring on us?
Yeah, in some ways it is about that, but there's an interesting element to that in this particular franchise, in that when you go back to the Charlton Heston Planet of the Apes from the 70s, like those old ones, it was evolution which was the driving factor in how the apes got the way they were. It was like you just remove most of the people from the picture and then the apes evolved and kind of took over things. This is not like that. So the previous film, Rise of the Planet of the Apes, and now Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, the reason the apes are the way they are is because of that human tinkering. So it's design. Like they're involved in the process, not just some evolutionary kind of mechanism. So this is kind of an interesting change that they've introduced into the franchise.
So this is a reboot, but it's also a re-explanation. It isn't telling the same story again. It's giving us a more fitting explanation to our mindset now of how something like this could have happened in the movie world?
Yeah, perhaps. The other interesting thing, though, is that they may get around to the story that we're all familiar with from years and years ago, because they did put some Easter eggs into the first film. There's a spaceship called the Icarus that Charlton Heston was on when he landed on what he discovers later is Earth. And there's a news report of that same ship, like spaceship, during that first movie of Rise of the Planet of the Apes. So perhaps in the next film or the film after that, they will have the guy like Charlton Heston that comes from not knowing what had been going on down to Earth. So we may get back around to that original story, but yes, they are kind of trying to retell this in a maybe a more sophisticated way.
Okay. And this one's also, unlike the others, starting, well, I guess it really makes no difference where you start in the cycle because it all comes around full circle. But it's not starting at that pivotal moment where this unknowing human realizes that he's returned to his home planet. This one's starting at the beginning. Is that simply because most of the people watching these movies weren't born when the first ones came out?
Sure. There's lots of people now that have not had any interaction with it back years and years ago before they were born, or maybe they just didn't have any interest in it at the time. But definitely... It's just a great new way to start it, and it also puts into effect through the storytelling this character of Caesar, which is the central character to both the first and now this second film, the ape, the chimpanzee Caesar, played by Andy Serkis. And it's just a wonderful, really interesting character that is the anchor to the whole thing right now. So fabulous.
Okay, so take us back to the first rebooted movie. Set this second one in its context and give us the story of the second one.
Sure. Actually, there's kind of an interesting biblical narrative, and I didn't get to write about it in the review, but it'll kind of help track along what was going on. So there's a way in which this character of Caesar, this chimpanzee, is very much like Moses from the book of Exodus. So what you have is, and as I tell this, it'll kind of start clicking. You have this little chimpanzee, baby chimpanzee, who is threatened with death and then is rescued out of it. Then he lives in a life of privilege in a way that other apes didn't get to live in a human household. And then because of an act of violence, he kind of is forced out of that family. And then eventually he comes and rescues a bunch of the chimpanzees and other simians out of captivity and leads them into the wilderness. So there's that, right? And what's going on is scientists seeking out cures for various diseases, they stumble across something that looks like it might cure Alzheimer's. They start using it on chimpanzees. The chimpanzees get very intelligent very quickly. Caesar, this little baby chimpanzee, is the son of one that was his mother who was tested on, and it was passed on to him. This greater intelligence, this ability to understand sign language and things like that, and eventually even to talk. That becomes then the lead ape, the lead chimpanzee who takes the other chimpanzees out of captivity from the laboratories and from the zoo and out into the wilderness. And that sets things up for this film. And then basically you have, in this film, some human survivors of this side effect from the drug that they were testing, which is a flu that wipes out nearly everyone on Earth. And that small group of human survivors in San Francisco are now pitted against this new colony of apes that are living just outside of town. And the reason they're pitted against each other is because the apes are sitting on a location that has a hydro power plant that the humans want to turn on to get power because they're running out of natural gas and gasoline and things like that.
Okay, so it's set up for a conflict. Does the movie kind of leave us hanging in the end with the beginning of kind of ape-human warfare?
Yeah, that's where it ends off. There is some ape-human warfare along the way, there's a couple kind of intense scenes in there. So families with, young teens and, maybe want to be careful about that. But that's kind of where they end off is at kind of like they're at loggerheads, humans and apes.
So This is pretty. I mean, the first ones were dark. I remember them quite well. They were left a deep impression on me. I was a little kid watching these things, and they were pretty dark. These seem, with the magic of the technology that's at work here. I mean, you cannot tell you're not watching real chimpanzees walking around and talking. I don't know how they do it, but the realism here. What does that add to the story, or does it add anything?
It adds a lot to the story. They're getting very good at this. It's almost exactly where they want to be. There's this opening sequence where they have these apes that are hunting deer, and it's kind of a breathtaking, beautiful, strange, interesting thing. It kind of reminds you of stuff out of like The Quest for Fire or The Clan of the Cave Bear or something like that. Only really, 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 really well done. You know, so this is a kind of fabulous stuff. But what they've done really is it all kind of works like hand in glove together, because what they've done is they've done a really simple story, and the simplicity of the story is kind of its strength. So all of that stuff doesn't end up being a distraction, all of the visual effects. It actually kind of helps out the whole thing. It works really well together. So the story you've got is of kind of like two fathers with their families, and there's a human father with his family, and the ape father, Caesar, the chimpanzee, with his family, and how that interacts with each other. These two characters. It's very interesting, and there's some different parallels going on in the writing, but it's really kind of a fabulous movie.
What I want to know finally on this is, I guess I could put it two different ways. Does the movie send an anti-human message? Or, to put it another way, do you end up rooting for Caesar and the apes in this movie?
That is interesting, because you definitely do end up rooting for Caesar and the apes, but you have, this is that parallelism, you have good apes and bad apes, and you have good humans and bad humans. So within the apes, you have a Caesar who had a loving childhood, quote-unquote, with a human family, who grew up knowing the good side of humans, right? So he's willing to help them in their time of need, in fact, fulfilling the fifth commandment, looking after their needs, in a way that his lieutenant, Koba, this other ape who was mistreated in laboratories, doesn't. Like, this other ape hates the humans, and he's antagonistic against humans. Flip side that into the human characters, and now you have the leader of the human characters, played by Gary Oldman, and he does not like the apes. His lieutenant, this fellow, his name is Malcolm in the movie, he has a great respect for the chimpanzees and apes, so he wants to help them. He doesn't want them to lose their land and lose their way of life. So you do have this kind of really kind of interesting weaving around of people who are breaking the fifth commandment and people who are trying to fulfill it for their neighbor. And so you have people to root for in the humans, and you have people to root for within the ape simian community. So really interesting stuff.
Finally, then, with only 30 seconds, I take it this is a movie that anticipates and requires a sequel.
I think that definitely it's on firm ground to make a sequel, and people would anticipate a sequel to this. If it should just end right here, I think that there are certain elements, certain beats, certain ways in which it concludes certain storylines where people could be happy if it just ended here. But it's on really firm ground. And like I said, this Andy Serkis is just fabulous pulling together this character of Caesar. It's a big achievement, actually.
Folks, I highly recommend that you read Pastor Ted Giese's review of the movie Dawn of the Planet of the Apes. You'll find it under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's associate pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada. He taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled The Christianity in the Movies, a Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
When we come back, we're going to spend the last half hour of the program today with Terry Mattingly, author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate. We're going to talk about an Atlantic Monthly essay about evangelical morality. Stay tuned. And we're going to have a ball, just
just like we always do.
Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see?
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Resurrection Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. Bethlehem Lutheran, Parma, Ohio. St. Paul's Lutheran, Lockport, Illinois. Faith Lutheran, Columbus, Indiana. Glory of Christ Lutheran, Plymouth, Minnesota. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Arnold, Missouri. Peace Lutheran, Sussex, Wisconsin. Our Redeemer Lutheran, Cedar Falls, Iowa. Zion Lutheran, Moberly, Missouri. And Elm Grove Lutheran, Elm Grove, Wisconsin. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300.
Molly Ziegler Hemingway will present the inaugural Village Lutheran Lecture on Christianity and Culture July 19th, 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Village Lutheran Church, Ladue, Missouri. Her topic will be Tales from the Front, Religious Liberty and the Media, July 19th, 9 to 11 a.m. at Village Lutheran Church, 9237 Clayton Road in Ladue, Missouri. We invite you to join us for this free and highly beneficial opportunity.
Leave it to the Lutheran Church to want all the discarded crap from evangelicalism and evangelical worship, jumping on that boat at the moment evangelicals are leaving it.
Craig Parton, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And it's my generation, the baby boomer generation, that frankly needs to die to leave all these entertainment orientation, market orientation, me orientation, what can the church do for me today? That kind of perspective in the Lutheran churches, which is really needs to be extirpated in some way.
You can listen to Craig Parton's presentation, Making the Case Against Lutherans Imitating Evangelicals, on an audio DVD from the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. We'll send it to you for a donation of $300. For more information, look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the 2nd century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The 6th century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to wisely seat us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.